Today I'd like to talk to you a little about a 3D volume visualization in medical imaging. So to do this, I'll give you a little bit of background. Oh, sorry. Excellent. Talk to you a little bit about 3D volume visualization in medical imaging. Yep. Got green. Anybody hear me? Is that okay? It was flashing green. There we go.
Oh, that's it. Perfect.
Excellent. Okay, third time lucky. So, volume visualization in medical imaging. So, I work for Toshiba Medical Visualization Systems, which from now on I'll just call TMVS because it actually can come out my open mouth in one. So we are a technology company based in Edinburgh. And I'll basically tell you a bit about the company. I'll tell you a bit about the scanners that actually give us the data that we want to visualize, and then I'll tell you about the teams that we've got to do the development, and then I'll show you some of the different 3D volume visualization techniques. Toshiba Medical Visual, we're based in Bonnington Bond down in Leith. We're about 130 people, a mixture of application developers, image analysis scientists, visualization scientists, researchers, clinical experts and testers, and some quality and regulatory people, and with a few managers that we can't seem to get rid of. So we're a wholly owned subsidiary of Toshiba Medical Systems. Toshiba Medical Systems is a large multinational company. They're based in Naso Shiobara in Japan, which is about 160 kilometers north of Tokyo, and it takes about an hour in the Shinkansen to get there. So the Toshiba Medical Systems builds the CT, MRI, X-ray, ultrasound, and PET scanners, and they get sold all around the world. And we've got several research and development offices based in Japan, Scotland, USA, and China. So I'll now give you a quick overview of the different medical imaging technologies that provide us with the data. The medical scanners are a tool that are used to give clinicians and doctors answers to questions about their patients. They want to know what's wrong with this patient. If they're getting into the further stages of the treatment planning, you can be helping to answer about diagnosis, treatment planning, during treatment, and treatment evaluation. So answer clinical questions about the patients and help them get the best treatment and the best outcome for the patients. So the first technology is just 2D, plain 2D X-ray. This is where we have an X-ray emitter at one side of the patient, we have a detector panel at the other side, and we fire some X-rays towards the patient, it goes through the patient, hits the detector panel, and the detector panel generates a 2D image, which gets presented to the user. This is actually, in the basis of this, been around for a very long time. I think now we've moved away from film, so I think it's all digital now for the majority of the industry. So this is a cheap and fast, and radiologists have spent a lot of time at university learning to read these effectively. But there are the limitations. It's a bit difficult to see where on the right-hand side. We can see the outline of the lungs, a bit of the heart and the ribs, but it's a bit difficult to see actually what's going on. So the next technology is computed tomography. This is known as CT scanners. So it still uses X-ray, an emitter and detector, but it puts them on a rotating gantry, and this gantry spins at high speed around the patient while to build up a signal that represents the sort of it's sort of taking photographs from all angles allows you to reconstruct the cross-sectional anatomy. So the image in the middle is a CT slice which cuts across the center of the patient. We can see the heart and the aorta at the back. So there's a lot of computer systems based around these systems, around computed tomography. We see there's on the left there's the scanner console and there's the scanner workstation. So the next one is MRI, so medical resonance imaging. There's no rotating gantry inside an MRI scanner. There's a large toroidal magnet, and then there's a lot of coils which you generate radio waves to. These radio waves and the magnetic fields generate. They make the hydrogen atoms align up with the magnetic field, and as they relax, they give off tiny radio signals, and then coils pick up those tiny radio signals, and then there's a whole bunch of scary maths underneath that turns this back into the MRI images we can see on the right-hand side. So depending on how you set up your magnetic fields and your radio waves, you can actually change what the signal represents. So we've got sort of T1 and T2 and T2 star, the sort of weird names of these sequences. So MRI is good for looking at soft tissue, brain, fat, tendons, things like that. If you compare it with CT, CT is good at looking at bones. If you use contrast agents, then it's good at looking at vessels. So they're different tools, and they're used for different things and looking at answering different questions about the patient. Next technology is ultrasound, which is the cheapest of the ones so far, so kind of in prevalent use all around the world. And with ultrasound, you use a transducer probe, which is the thing on the left-hand side. It's placed against the patient. The transducer emits ultrasound pulses, which propagate through the patient, and then it starts listening, and then it waits for the pulses to reflect off the structures inside the patient, and it bounce back towards the transducer again, and it uses the timing information to build up distances, and then more information there to sort of generate the 2D images you can see on the right-hand side. So this is someone's kidney. So next one is nuclear medicine. So this is different from the CT and MRI in that the patient is fed what's known as a tracer. And this is a very slightly radioactive substance. It's a very short half-life, so they need to make the tracer quite close to where they're using it. And then this tracer can be bound to different tissues. So the predominant one is glucose-based, and then it goes to, and it gets absorbed into the areas of the body that have high metabolic activity. So fortunately, that high metabolic activity can correspond with cancerous tumors. So once the tracer has been absorbed into the cancer or the bit of part of the anatomy you're trying to image, then you can place them inside the scanner. And as the radioisotope decays, it gives off a pair of gamma rays, and these can be detected by the scanner. And then the scanner can build up a picture of where the tracer has, where the cancer is originating within the body. And we see this sort of blue heat map image where you can sort of get signals from inside the body. And then we've got interventional x-ray. So this goes beyond primary, it's not necessarily primary diagnostic tool. This becomes a treatment tool. So this is used in real time to guide catheters. And these catheters get navigated through they place them probably through the a cut in the femoral artery, and they navigate them through, and they can use that to retrieve things like blockages caused by thrombus, so it's about blood clots getting lodged in the brain, or you can use it to sort of open up the coronary arteries if you've got coronary artery disease. So it's a different sort of tool. This one can do 3D volume imaging as well. And so we've got lots of data here. A lot of these modalities are capable of generating 3D and 4D images. So we come from a time where mainly it was cross-sectional images, and required very expert radiologists to do the interpretation of the cross-sectional imaging. They were very good at sort of scanning back and forward from these cross-sectional slices to understand the patient's anatomy. And then they could make their diagnosis and send the report back to the referring physicians. But we can make this a bit easier. We can build some visualization tools that help that communication from the radiologist back to the cardiologist or the referring physician, and we can use these tools to help those clinicians deliver better care for the patients. So I'll give you a bit of an overview about the development teams we've got within TMVS. We've got application and framework teams. So this team builds the medical applications that get used on the scanner consoles that get shipped with all the different scanner types, and they also develop standalone workstation applications which run on PCs, and they sort of integrate with hospital networks to pull images from the image archives. So these guys typically use sort of C++ and C#, sort of JavaScript and HTML for the web-based sort of thin client type applications, sort of Python and Ruby to wire things together, and the wiring components developed by the sort of the visualization and the image analysis teams. And on the right-hand side is a couple of examples of the sort of applications that the users would use to interact with the data. The image analysis technology team kind of specializes in three different areas. There is registration, which is if you have two scans of a patient at perhaps different time points, and they move slightly between scans, they're trying to find the points where they've got correlation, so find the mapping, so find the same location in both scans. And I'll refer to it. This is kind of important if you start using, if you want to track the size of, has this tumor reduced in size since the previous scan? If you've got the registration information, then you can actually start doing that analysis and presentation of the results automatically. Segmentation is about finding all the points within the scans that correspond to the same anatomical structure. So you see some on the pictures there, sort of find which bit is the heart within this cardiac scan, which is the aorta and the coronary vessels. And then there's tracking, which is sort of, once you've found the aorta, can you track through and automatically find all the coronary arteries? If you can then find all the arteries, you can then do analysis to work out if there's a narrowing in those arteries, and you can work out from that sort of limitations on what they're called stenosis for if you've got sort of coronary artery disease. We also have a research team. So this team works with, develops advanced image analysis and visualization techniques, and it maintains the links with the universities and the research partners. So it does a bit more sort of speculative, longer term research, and publishes papers and things like that. And we have a selection of sponsor students. So we have sort of engineering doctorate students and MSCs and PhDs who work part-time within the office. And there's also an annual internship program where we develop short 3-month research projects for where we take in sort of graduate level students or approaching third or fourth year. And then there's the visualization technology team. This is the team that I'm the sort of team lead for. So we develop the software that takes the volume data we get from the scanners and turns it into turns it into 2D images that get presented to the user within these applications. So we use a lot of interactive computer graphics techniques from games, from movie industries. We'll take anything and then we can sort of apply it to medical imaging data. So we do a lot of volume rendering, polygonal rendering, and the people working on our team tend to know enough a lot about 3D geometry, linear algebra, and optimization. We tend to work with some really big data sets and we want to keep them interactive, so we've done things like GPU acceleration. We do a lot of work with C++ and NVIDIA's CUDA GPGPU language. So now I'll go over some of the visualization techniques. This is one known as intensity projection. So this is a basic one. So this is generates an image from the volume data that's similar to the 2D X-ray. This is goes beyond the 2D X-ray in that we can actually change in the application itself. We can reproject that from every possible angle. And so the maximum intensity projection, basically we find the maximum value along through the volume and put that into the image to be presented. So on the right hand side, I'll use the same data set. And the next one, I'll bring in the segmentation algorithms from the image analysis team, and they can automatically identify all the bone from within the data set, and then we can use that information while we're generating the image to suppress the bone. And now that we've suppressed the bone, we can actually see all the blood vessels within this patient's wrist. And since we've used a sort of what's known as a contrast agent within a CT scan, we can actually see that see the vessels quite clearly, and there's a large aneurysm in the person's wrist. So that's kind of what's going on. But if we go beyond sort of segmented IP, we can go to sort of shaded volume rendering. So this is where we start assigning sort of optical properties to the different tissues within the in the volume data set. So what the transparency and the color. And then as we traverse through the data set, we can build up an image like this where we've got some lighting information, transparency, and color. And so we can see all the bones actually look like bones now. And we've got a nice, large, red aneurysm. So these techniques are good for communicating from the radiologist back to the referring physician and even back towards the patient itself. Where the patient understands what's wrong with them, then they can engage with their treatment better. What I've covered so far has all been structural imaging, where we see what structures within inside the patient. We can actually go beyond that and go into functional imaging. In this case, we can derive information about how the tissue is working. Can we work out how much blood is going through this tissue per time period? And once you start looking at functional imaging, we can look at the colors can be mapped to, is this tissue viable? Is it alive, dead? And then we go, it's information that couldn't possibly be done with a single structural slice. These are called perfusion studies. On the right-hand side, there's a cross-sectional slice through the patient's chest, and we can see there's where the darker colors are, the point where there's been a blockage in one of the vessels inside the lung, and that's caused some of the lung tissue to be damaged. We can also do sort of 2D ultrasound rendering. So this might be more familiar to some people in the audience who have kids, so if they a lot of prenatal exams. So here we have a 2D slice, and this is good at seeing through the structures. We see around the baby's head, and we see there's in the middle there's the kind of baby's heart, and you can see that make sure that everything's okay and that the pregnancy is proceeding as expected. But if we use a different sort of ultrasound transducer, we can actually generate 3D and 4D images from that. So this is a volume rendered image from quite photogenic unborn baby. So we do what we did with the shaded volume render and apply optical properties and generate this colored image. But we can actually go beyond this. If we start simulating how light interacts with the tissue a little bit more with a more complex model, then we can generate images that are more photorealistic. So this is called global illumination rendering. We do a simulation. We work out how the light passes through it. We've got shadowing, and this is pretty much approaching state of the art in visualization, and this has been in their scanners for about a year to 18 months. It suppresses noise. Not ultrasound can be quite a noisy modality. Rare modalities is the scanner type, and the global illumination means that we're makes it easier to perceive depth and reduces noise, which is all good. Another technology we can use from MRI is diffusion imaging. So you can set up an MRI scan to work out the direction at which water molecules are moving within the patient's tissue. And if you repeat the scan, you can then build up a kind of 3D map where you can do work at the traces. This is called tractography. And we can build up these colored ribbons which correspond to the neurological pathways within the brain. The radiologist or the clinician can then use this information to either work out if this patient's just had a stroke, is the brain still viable, or if they're doing treatment planning, or if they're doing surgical planning, can they work out what the most appropriate way is to go and say for extracting a tumor. Okay. Another one is slightly less pleasant, but so virtual colonoscopy is a way of how we can make a colonoscopy exam slightly less unpleasant for the patient. The unpleasant bit was we basically don't have to use an endoscope. The patient still needs to be inflated with air before being put in the scanner, but once the scan's been made, then they don't have to endure too much more discomfort. And then we can use the sort of different we've got. So fly-through rendering on the right-hand side, and if we do analysis on this, how the colon's all folded up within your lower intestines, we can actually virtually unfold it and then reveal it as an entire, what's called a dissected view. So it makes it much easier to find if there's polyps on the surface of the colon. Our next patient is probably a little, unfortunately, is already dead by the time we scanned them. So this is a project where we were working with the National Museum of Scotland to scan one of their mummies. So this is for an exhibition a couple of years ago at the museum. We had the mummy scanned at the Toshiba scanner at the Royal Infirmary of Edinburgh, and then we took the data set and made a selection of animations that were used within the exhibition. One of the things that the mummy remained fully wrapped, so nobody knew what was inside the wrappings. So that was one of the rarities with the mummy they had. So within the mummy, we can find that there was a sort of scarab beetle on a sort of metal plate just placed against the skull, which is the picture in the middle, and a few other different sort of trinkets and pieces of jewelry that were kind of hidden. So on the left, we can see the actual photograph of the mummy that was scanned. We've got, to the right of that, we've got the volume rendering, and then we can use some virtual unwrapping to look at the inner wrappings that are on the mummy. And on the right-hand side, we've got another intensity projection view where you can see some of the trinkets and the metal artifacts that were within the scan. And we also found there was a scroll wrapped up and placed behind the mummy's right femur. I think it's gone way beyond patient by this time. Sure. So at CMBS we've got a very much a clinical focus. So we want to make sure that the technologies we develop actually help improve the outcomes for our patients. And that's kind of the goals between that. We do take our prototypes out to various hospitals around the world. We'll test our techniques against the gold standards and use that feedback to make our products better. In the last year, we've become involved with STEMnet. I think we have about 12 STEMnet ambassadors within the company. We've been involved in several events over the last year. And we're looking for other opportunities where we can help inspire kids in science, technology, engineering, and maths. So In conclusion, computer systems and computing underpins the entirety of the medical imaging field, and 3D imaging is just a small part in that. And ourselves and all our competitors are still innovating. We're building new scanners, applications, and new techniques, and there's various new systems going into hospitals that are enabling better and better care for everybody. And it's an interesting industry to work. We've got lots of cool technological problems to solve, and it's really satisfying to build things that help make people a bit better. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. So often in secondary schools, we get told pupils are recommended, you go and become a doctor, go and become a scientist, don't take computing. And I think very clearly we see that all three of those fields, science and computing and medicine and maths as well, can all combine. We should be encouraging more kids, instead of going off and becoming doctors and scientists, encourage more kids to go off and do computing in order to get into really fascinating fields. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cool. And I'm glad you talked about STEMnet as well, because next up we have Gus, who's going to talk to us about the STEMnet project and how STEMnet can help us in schools across Scotland.